questions so much about tshuva and the sesame tshuva itself is also very telling. They tell a story that after the altar of Kelm was Nifter, the Kelm Yeshiva was looking for somebody who would give them direction for a Musar Yeshiva. To be without a Musar master is unimaginable. So they enlisted Rabitzla, that Rabitzla should come from St. Petersburg and he should lead the Kelm Yeshiva through Elul. So I guess he ran out of excuses for when not to, and he went and he came. But so the first shmooze that he gave, he told a mussel of a fellow who had stepped into the forest and he lost his way, and he couldn't quite figure out which way he was going and how he was going to get out of the. It's just a story that you've heard many times before. That so he said, tried to turn this way and tried to turn that way and tried to follow this path, and he realized it was getting dark, and there was nothing that he can do. He couldn't find his way out of the forest, and he rested. He tried to figure out a way to sleep. And in the morning he tried it again. He went through nearly the entire day and he was getting quite desperate that he had not found his way. And finally, as the day was nearing the end, so he saw a person in the distance and he was just so overwhelmed with relief. And he ran over to him and he said, "Could you please guide me out of the forest?" So the fellow said, "How long have you been here stuck in the forest?" So he said, "Since yesterday. I had to sleep here. Since yesterday I've been stuck in the forest." So he said, "I've been stuck in the forest for 40 years." So in desperation the fellow said, "Well, then you can't help me?" So he said, "I can help you. I can tell you which paths not to take. I can show you which paths don't lead out of the forest." "And so you've brought me here," he said to the students in Kelm, "you brought me here to help you navigate Elul." "I've been trying for many, many decades. I can't, I'm stuck. But there's one thing, as an old man, there's one thing I can do. I can show you which paths not to take. And show you which path don't lead you out of the forest." So, first off, by way of a drush, for those who follow the Daf Yomi, it's a little bit close to their hearts. Rosh Hashanah, as relates to Aseres Yemei Tshuva, is essentially the relationship between Shema and Ve'ahavta. Shema is our declaration. The Gemara there in Psochim and Nun Vav points out that the Anshe Yericho didn't make a pause between Shema and V'ahavta. Why do you need to make a pause between Shema and V'ahavta? So Rashi says, because one is our declaration and the other is the Tzivui. The Tzivui. So we have to declare before we can hear the tzivui. And they didn't make a pause. They ran it all together. Later on, the Gemara expands, and the role of Baruch Shem Kvod Machusu La'olam Vod, what role that has in the intervening level between Shema and V'ahavta. And clearly, Baruch Shem Kvod Machusu La'olam Vod is vitally important in this story. But that's the basic difference. Which, the reason why Rosh Hashanah is part of the Aseres Yemei Tshuva is because without the idea that there's a mitzvah, that there's a melech, without a concept that there's a melech in the world, then the notion of tzivui is irrelevant. The concept of tzivui is meaningless if there isn't a melech. We can talk about who commanded and what's left. What's left is just people with guilty consciences. That's all. There's a whole tshuva process that Christians also go through. Nothing to do with Avodas Hashem at all. It has to do with perfectionism and conscience. They feel bad about what they did because for the same reason that people at the gym, and they don't like their triceps, so they work out their triceps because they don't like the way they look in the mirror this way. Nothing to do with the Ravonu Shalom. It's just self-improvement. Libraries and bookstores filled with self-improvement books. Everybody wants self-improvement. Mostly women. They don't need it because they're perfect in the first place. Some 80% of the self-help books are bought by women. You can't get men they can buy it and then they leave it on the shelf. But self-help and self-improvement is a universal concept. It has to do with a person's conscience. Nothing to do with Avodas Hashem. I want to be better. I want to be perfect. So the first step of the Aseres Yemei Tshuva is Hashem Melech. That's the first step. There's a king. And he's Melech, he's Echad. And everything revolves around that primary statement of Malchus Hashem. And that I am not looking for self-improvement because somehow it is this necessary to improve my tennis game. Because that's what it looks like when you read the self-help books. It looks like I want to play and get a better game of tennis. If you ask, why do you want to play a better game of tennis? The answer is because that's what I want to do. If I'm playing tennis, I want to play the best possible game of tennis. And if I'm lifting weights, I want to see how much weight I can lift. And if I'm driving a car, the race car, I want to see how fast I can go. And if I'm... That's because human beings, once they discover that they have a capacity, they want to see how far they can push it. That is a human nature. We discover we have a capacity, we want to press it to the limits. See how far we can go with it. So the violin virtuoso wants to discover how it is that you can play a piece that is seemingly impossible. And after he's all done, and he's managed to play the most complicated piece, now he sees if he can do it with one string broken on his violin. Why? Because that's a human being. That's a mensch. Now, we can harness that power, by the way. That's a power that we need to know about. It's a power that we can harness. It's also a power that can really trip us up. So it's, as with all very powerful powers in the human being, that power, when it's harnessed, it can be very, very useful. And if it's unchecked, it can dominate the person in a endless pursuit of perfectionism where he forgets the plot completely. Absolutely loses the plot. So the first step is to subjugate all of the story to Malchus Hashem. That the reason why we have any interest in improving ourselves or in using the kochos that we have or in sublimating aspects of ourselves and dominating and redirecting aspects of ourselves, the answer to the question is one answer. Because Ribono Shel Olam, the creator of heaven and earth, who by virtue of his having created us, has a will, and a will for each and every one of us, and that will is binding, and to that will we are ultimately answerable. And that sentence, which is Malchus, Sichronos, Shofros, that sentence, which he created us, he has a will for us, and it is a will to which we are ultimately answerable, that statement, if it's not put in place in a healthy, central way, everything else essentially becomes self-worship. Everything. Everything degenerates into self-worship. With that in place, everything has a makom. Everything has a makom. We're living in an era that it is my sense, it's my sense, that there is nothing that anybody has ever said that is so true that you haven't met me who turned it into something silly. Everything that I'm aware of, every statement that I'm aware of that is true, there's somebody who's taken it to some ridiculous extreme and made it silly. I cannot find an exception to that rule, except it may be that rule. Maybe I'm not sure. Mistama, there are those who did not take things to ridiculous extremes. But if you look around, you will notice that there's a tremendous desire to latch on to specific aspects of truth, because of an inability or an unwillingness to acknowledge that the story is complex. And so when you catch some aspect of truth, it's like catching a wave in Hawaii. It's like you just gotta go with that wave all the way into the, just that wave demands that I ride that wave all the way in. There's just no way to say, okay, one aspect of reality. Not the whole reality. It's something like a brilliant diamond. If you have a diamond with many facets, so if you've never seen a diamond before, if somebody exposes one of the facets of a brilliant diamond, your whole being is going to be caught up in the beauty, the magnificence of that facet that you've now been exposed to. The light and the color and the depth of that facet of the diamond that you've been exposed to, wow, with no sense that somebody else would say, could we see the whole diamond? More? More? Look at the truth that I just revealed. Yeah, that's good. But the world is filled with people who have destroyed it by latching on to one truth without looking at the whole diamond. In the secular world, for example, could anybody question whether the economic drive is a potentially devastating drive in the human condition? Could anybody deny that? It'd be hard to deny. And if you wanted to look in the psukim, you would see all of the halachos that govern the economic drive, that are designed to tame the economic drive. You would seem to then conclude that Marx was right. Yeah, tame the economic drive. How do you know Marx was wrong? Oh, so there are those who waited for communism to collapse to know that he was wrong. But you didn't need to wait for communism to collapse to know that he was wrong. How do you know that he was wrong? Because there's other psukim. Because there's other psukim in the Torah. Psukim don't only deal with the economic drive. Is it extremely important to curb the economic drive? Absolutely. How do you know? Because many halachos that govern the economic drive. How do you know it's not the whole story? Because there's other pesukim. So what happens to somebody who singularly focuses only on those pesukim? He's the person who goes to the gym and only works out his left arm. With pulleys and weights and miyudeyama, he just works out his left arm. So after a little while, he starts to look a little silly. Could we acknowledge that sexual drive is very important and very central, that must be harnessed and appropriately used? Can we prove that that's true? So, can prove that it's true? Many, many halachos that discipline and control the sexual urge? No, so I guess Freud was right. It's essential. Pleasure, seeking pleasure is a central feature. It's the reason why people are alive. Sukkim Shah, he's right. So how do you know he's wrong? Because there's another pasuk. There's a pasuk of Shema. There's a pasuk of Shema. It's pasukim that transcend, that are far more meaningful than simply curbing the sexual drive. As important as that is, and it brings kedusha in its wake, v'chule, but kedusha itself. So I have yet to find any idea that has been promoted, that caught the interest of human beings, that has not been distorted along the way. And so I've come here today to tell you that you're going to have to do this thing yourself. You're going to have to do this process of growth, of tshuva. You're going to have to do it yourself. You can get guidelines from Chazal, Shari Tshuva, Chavos Olavavos. You can get guidelines. However, the insurance that you will not be distorting, you can only get within yourself. Obviously, in consultation with those who know you well and who have a bit of a larger perspective and who are able to notice when it is that you're taking something off to a direction where it wasn't intended to go. The balance, for example, between strengthening your strengths versus working on overcoming your weaknesses. Tell me who can tell you that other than you. If you don't strengthen your strengths, you are throwing away your tools. You want to work on a project. I want to do it without any tools. I want to do it bare hands. You know, but there's a reason why you were given tools. You were given tools because the one who gave you the challenge also gave you these tools. And so you have to strengthen your working with your tools. Oh, so I understand that I should really work on my strengths. What about my flaws? And the answer is, yeah, you got to work on your flaws. It's written in all the books. You got to work on your flaws. Well, what do I do? What do I do now? What do I do today? And the answer is, guide your own ship. Nobody can guide that ship for you. And as frightening as that sounds, there's a reason why you were made the captain of your ship. It's because you are in the position to ask the Almighty for guidance and assistance. It is the mitzvah that is written, about which it is written in the Torah, Ki karov eilecha hadavar me'od beficha uvilvavcha la'asosa. This mitzvah of change, of growth, of development, of tshuva, ki karov eilecha hadavar me'od. Unfortunately, there has been a tendency to lapse into either anarchistic self-direction without a goal and a direction to align oneself with the Ratzon HaBore. It's almost anarchistic just self-improvement. Just be better. And the one extreme. And on the other extreme, a slavish kind of following somebody else's recipe for how to be in Odom HaSholem, as if somehow their recipe is going to work for me and not going to make me look silly. But it will. It will make me look silly. Did I ever tell you a story about the my kids are orthodontist? I'm sure I imagine that I haven't told it at some point. When we first came to Israel, I was looking for an orthodontist for our oldest son. So we got all, we didn't know anything, greenhorns. What did we know about who was what? And we got names, this one and that one. So finally I found somebody who it seemed he came very well recommended, and I knew he was the right one because he was about twice as expensive as everybody else. And it seemed like a real bardas. It seemed like a bardas in the field. It seemed like a person with seichel. So he described to me a treatment plan for my son, and he turned to me and he said, "You had orthodonture." Tells me, he says, "You had orthodonture. It was poor orthodonture." I said, "Oh, yeah." I also had a sense when I was a kid that those guys were not sharp as tacks on the wall. So he said, "You had orthodonture. It was poor orthodonture." I said, "How do you know?" He said, "Because they straightened out your teeth without regard to your face." I turned to him on the spot. I said, "I don't know what you're going to charge me for my kid's orthodonture, but I owe you the world for that line. Because for years, I have been dealing with people who have been trying to work on themselves and look silly. They look strange. And I've never had a metaphor to understand why it is that they look strange. And the answer is they straighten their teeth without looking at their face." He said, "Your teeth weren't meant to be straight. Your face is the contours. And I'm a crooked face. So I'm supposed to have crooked teeth. I don't know exactly. I don't know the lumdis of how that's supposed to be. How crooked it must be that I should be able to eat. I mean, I presume that even people with a crooked face should be able to eat. So he's a lumdin. And in his lumdis, he understands what it means that you don't just focus on the person's face as if you put like a mask around the whole face. And you just straighten out the teeth." And I said, "You know, for years, I meet people, and you see on the paper, it looks like they're really working on themselves. Why do they feel so strange?" And he gave me the muscle. He straightened his teeth without looking at his face. Take a look. You have to have a holistic sense of who you are. So this puts us into a high-risk activity. Because as soon as you put the person in charge, there's going to be some people who are going to say, "Oh, great, I'm in charge. I don't need to worry about anything. Full steam ahead." Without so much as consultation with rebellion, conscience, anything. Full steam ahead. And there are those who are going to go into panic mode. Because I can't possibly be in charge of this ship. Occupational hazard. Occupational hazard of being the captain of the ship. But the reality is that the Rabbonu Shalom put each of us as the captain of the ship, and that reality does carry with it certain risks. I have wrote down a risk or two just to give you an illustration. Charata. One of the five Chelkei Atshuva is Charata. In English, that translates into either regret or remorse, depending on which book you're looking at. Those who have self-esteem on their minds, so they worry about regret and remorse lapsing into guilt. Terribly worried that regret and remorse lapses into guilt, and guilt is a crippling experience and prevents growth. and to such a degree that somebody once commented to me that Bizman Hazeh Charata nowadays no longer part of the tshuva process. The other parts relevant, Aziva Sachet, Kabbalah La'osid, Vidui, yeah, not Charata. Why not Charata? Because it's just guilty complexes. So I remember going over to Rav Kinnerik and asking him about this line that somebody had said. So in his classic, don't take it out of the Shulchan Aruch. In other words, is it true that there are many people who, when they start regretting their actions, lapse into crippling depression and guilt? Is that true? Yes. How do I know that it's true? Look around. It's true. Are there those who use regret extremely usefully? Absolutely. Is it perhaps in the minority? Are there fewer people in the world today who know how to use remorse well? Maybe. Maybe. But I might be one of them. And so I need to know that about myself. I need to know whether I should be focusing on charata, on remorse, because it can build me, it can motivate me. The way the Shari Tshuva says, if a person knows how to drink the bitter cup of remorse, when the Aveira comes again, I'm not going to drink that cup again. And it becomes a very powerful motivator not to do it, not to do the Aveira again. Because he drank the bitter cup of remorse. I'm not drinking it again. And anything that helps us to vanquish our arch enemy, are you going to write it off as being bad news? Typically, what this person was referring to is the fact that guilt is being used the way the Chovas HaLevavos refers to treif charata. He has some very rough words about treif charata. I don't know if any of you have seen Chovas HaLevavos. He's got some sharp words about treif charata. So treif charata is basically, it's not nice to say, it's just preparing the groundwork for the next Aveira. That's all it is. I can't just do the next Aveira because then I feel like a pig. So I have to throw up in the middle. I can't just keep on eating. Feel piggish. So I have to throw up in the middle. But it's all to be able to eat more. And so that throwing up in the middle is the charata. Rabbeinu Bechaya, you don't let us sleep. You don't let us sleep at night. Nothing's okay. Everything has to be assessed and held up in the light of seichel, of das, of putting it into context. Is it healthy? Is it not healthy? Charata? Michalkei Atshuva. Who can write out charata? Charata that is used as basically just a grips, so that the person can somehow, if you have enough charata, so there's like a dog. He says like a dog, it throws some grass on its tzoa. So the dog thinks that it's all covered now. It just doesn't turn around to check that nothing's covered. Nothing changed, nothing improved, nothing. That's charata. The tray for charata. So we're going to write out charata? What about the charata that brings a person to really feel, it's a bitter cup, I'm not drinking it again? I've often, people ask me, describe charata, what would it look like? What's a healthy charata? So, college campuses, so I taught, described that there's a bulletin board, and there's a specific bulletin board where a party was announced, and I took a shortcut that morning. I took a shortcut, I didn't go past the bulletin board, so I missed the sign, and I heard that it was a fantastic party. I feel terrible. It's never going to happen again. I'm never going to take that shortcut again. Every single day I'm going to walk past the bulletin board because I don't want to miss out on another party. So I really wanted that party. And I missed out because I didn't see the sign. I didn't see the sign because I took a shortcut. So I'm not going to take a shortcut anymore. I'm going to walk to class via the bulletin board. Because I don't want to miss out another time. It takes me an extra minute to get to class as a result, or 2 minutes, or whatever. So be it. That's what I'm going to do. I'm not willing. The terrible feeling that I had when I missed out on such a fun party, I'm not prepared to do that again. I'm going to walk via the bulletin board and see, there's a party. That's using charata, 100% toelas. I had remorse. And that remorseful feeling remains with me, the taste of that feeling that I missed out. So I change my route, and I don't miss out on that again. I don't have to have that feeling again. So charata would be one example of something which has to be held up into this in the light and looked at. Is it for me? To what degree? In what way? And everybody's looking for the rule book that's going to tell them whether or not they should be using charata. And there is no rule book because there are no two people who are identical. We are growing, we're maturing, we're advancing, we're aging. And so what was useful at one point might not be useful at another, and vice versa. Person has to be a bar das to be able to stop and take a look. What's on my agenda in terms of the tshuva process? We could go through all five. Kabbalah la'asid is a way of example. Resolutions. The Goyim also have resolutions. That's almost a joke by them. The concept of a New Year's resolution by the Goyim is something that lasts until January 2nd. Was it Mark Twain who said that quitting smoking is easy? I've done it hundreds of times. So Kabbalah la'asid, it gives the person the sense that they've actually done something when they've done nothing. So we should read it out, yeah? No more Kabbalah la'asid, because everybody just fools themselves anyway, right? So no more Kabbalah la'asid. No more resolutions. Everybody, they overdo it. They take on resolutions that are too large. They take on resolutions they can't live with. They take on resolutions that are not in line with their nature. That doesn't work with who they are. That doesn't actually advance them to the next step. So let's write Kabbalah la'asid. Let's write it out. We took out charata. Now let's take out Kabbalah la'asid. What are you going to say? Still in the Shulchan Aruch, right? Don't take it out of the Rambam. It's still there. So, but wait a second. But maybe I'm going to take on Kabbalahs that are off, that are wrong, that are too much, that are too little, that are not pushing myself, that are pushing myself too much. Yeah. That's certainly a risk factor. So somebody has to give me the rules. Ki karov eilecho hadavar meod beficho uvilvovcho la'asoso, the mitzvah's tshuva, we have to go back inside. That is why the Gedolei HaBalei Musar, they went inside during Elul, they went deep inside. And only inside. That wasn't the time where they went and sat and listened to Shmuzin. That was the time where they were doing that deep personal connection, so that they knew what course they were on, and if they were using Kabbalah la'asid properly or not. I don't think that we need to go through all the Chelki HaTshuva. I think that Azivas HaChet, I think that everybody can sort of, every aspect of Tshuva has trade-offs. Say a person who decides that he wants to work on his tefillah. He's been mumbling his davening for enough years. They decided it's time to actually speak to their Ribbono Shel Olam. Okay. Yeah. Comes a certain point in a person's life when the mumbling just doesn't cut it anymore. So he wants to start speaking to the Ribbono Shel Olam. So how do you do that? So he looks up, he starts to get first bracha Shmoneh Esrei, Shema, no. And before you know it, he's got an obsessive compulsive disorder. What happened? What went wrong? How did it become obsessive? The answer is because there's no idea that's such a good idea that it can't turn into a bad idea. So he took a good idea and turned it into a bad idea. So, okay, no, he's not going to do that. He's just going to daven slowly. That's all. Just. Any sentence that starts with the word just is probably wrong. So my son, when he's dealing with his kehila in America, so the sentence begins, Rabbi, I heard there's an Indian. He says, yes, there is. There's an Indian for everything. There's always an Indian. The question is whether you should have anything to do with that Indian. But the sentence begins, isn't there an Indian? Yes, there is. We're not up to that yet. Now first know where you are. Is there an Indian? There's always an Indian. So he decided he's going to daven slowly. Fine. Sounds very nice. Sounds very reasonable. Only one problem. It had the word just at the beginning of the sentence. We're just going to daven slowly. Oh yeah? Just? What are you going to do about the fact that you're the last person in the shul finishing Shemoneh Esrei? Do you know what a corrosive effect that has on your neshama to know that you're the last guy to finish Menestre in the Beis Medrash? You're aware of the corrosive effect that it has to feel as though Rabbi Yisrael Salanter wouldn't let one of his Talmidim to be Mekabel Shabbos early. One of his Talmidim always wanted to be Mekabel Shabbos, a plug, gone to the mikveh, put on his Shabbos clothes, was sitting in the Beis Medrash, was learning Shir HaShirim and learning the Chazals, and that's where he was in the Beis Medrash. Well, everybody else was running through the Beis Medrash, picking up their pens and cleaning up their books and doing the. So Rabbi Yisrael said to him, "It may not be kedai for you to be mekabel Shabbos early on the cheshbon of looking at everybody else like they're the mechal Shabbos." Does that mean a person shouldn't daven a longer, slower daven? Does that mean a person shouldn't try to be mosif on Shabbos, to be mekabel Shabbos properly? They should come into Shabbos with the. Does that mean a person shouldn't do that? No. Maybe absolutely appropriate for a person to daven a slow Shemoneh Esrei, taking into account that it is a corrosive, dangerous thing to do. Does that mean a person shouldn't do it? No. Does that mean the person should do it? No. So how am I supposed to decide? You must know what it'll take for you to start speaking to your Creator. If you've discovered that there's a problem, that you are experiencing davening three times a day and not speaking to your Creator, there needs to be a modification. That modification may involve heightening your awareness and your focus. It may involve davening more slowly. Oh, so you're telling me that we should... No. I'm telling you that there's a trade-off. And that everything that is done in the name of your Avodas Hashem comes with risk factors. Does it mean that you shouldn't take risks? How do you move forward in life if you don't take risks? Sometimes you have to take risks. But when you take risks, you have to know that you're taking a risk. That's the dangerous part of taking a risk, is if you think that there is none. That's terrible. You think that there's no risk because you followed somebody's recipe. So that's dangerous. Change itself. Change. When a person changes, this is very disruptive. Do you know that? That change is disruptive to a person's system? You're aware of that? Change is disruptive? You guys should be pretty aware that change is disruptive. Change is disruptive. It can create a number of downsides. It can make the person depressed. It can also make the person so elated and so elevated that he stops noticing the traffic down here. With us humans, in the flow of traffic. Change is a very powerful process, and it affects the core of a person. Does that mean a person shouldn't change? We're here. That's our Bono Shalom wants us to take the raw material that he granted us and to work with it. It's unfortunate that the Mamash, the Goyim, were so successful in getting this word into the Jewish people. We're supposed to take the raw material and do what with it? What's that?
Refine it.
Refine it. As opposed to? What's the standard answer? Perfect it. The standard answer that you'll hear is that we're supposed to take the raw material and perfect it, straight out of the Christian world. Refine. Align it more closely with the midos of the Creator. To align ourselves more closely with our Creator, leave the perfection to Him. We are designed to be error prone. Everybody's aware of that. Schmeitzer writes that in the Akdama, quotes it from an early source. We are designed, by design, a human being is error prone. And therefore the mission of a human being is to learn from his mistakes, not to be perfect. That's the mission of the person. The key is not to repeat the mistakes. That's the key. Unfortunately, that's where we are. That's where most of us get into trouble, is that we repeat the mistakes. Because the expression, it's no big deal, is always in place the first time that we make a mistake. If the expression, it's no big deal, or we're only human, kicks in the first time that we make a mistake, so there's going to be predictably a second time. And once there's a second time, so then it has insinuated itself into our nature. And Chazal used the expression of Nasalo Keheter. It doesn't have the sense of red line. I believe that Rabbi Akiva Tatz describes in one of his books why it is that if a person does tshuva from an Avera, the Avera becomes a schus. He says, because, listen to the Lundis. He says, before he did the Avera, he had the potential to do the Avera, which he was unaware of, but he was a person who had the potential to do this Avera. Having done the Avera and learned from the mistake and made the necessary corrections, he's now a person who is not prone to doing that Avera. Assuming we caught it before it became a habit. So that improvement is the result of his having done the Avera. Had he not done the Avera, he would not have known that he was prone to such an Avera. So the Avera became the reason why he now is more closely aligned with the Ribbono Shel Olam, where he's not prone to that mistake. The Avera becomes the Schus. Risk factors. Orcha Sadikim says that a person's at risk when he's fasting. What is he at risk of, says Orcha Sadikim? Short-tempered. Person's hungry, so he has a tendency to be short-tempered. Risk factor associated with not having eaten. It's a good enough reason to have breakfast. Why should I have breakfast? So one of the reasons that I should have breakfast, aside from all the wonderful reasons that I should be able to learn and have energy and koach and say thank you to my wife or whatever, all the other good reasons, so one of them is I shouldn't be short-tempered. Good. So now a person shouldn't fast, right? Fasting is bad. A person shouldn't fast. Shouldn't be mekabel tainus. Shouldn't fast. Short-tempered. What's the answer? There are times, one of the chelke atshuva fasting is, it burns up, it doesn't just burn up calories. Fantastic thing. So should a person fast? What about short-temperedness? That burns, boy, does that burn up. That burns everything straight from here to you know where. So what does a person do? The answer is, as the captain of the ship, you need to make some assessments that are difficult assessments to make. You need to work with them and try them and see what works and see what doesn't. And you need to be aware of the risk factors. So that if you read somewhere about the beauty and importance of fasting, it could be that the person who was writing that didn't have any risk factors. He fasted clean. But I have to know myself, and I know that risk, that's a tremendous risk factor. It's enough to taneos that Chazal instituted for us. I'm not taking on more taneos. Because I'm not prepared, I'm not taking that risk. I know myself better than that. But does that mean that we should write out fasting as part of the tshuva process? I know it's become a little bit unpopular to talk about fasting. But the reason why we start slichos when we do is to ensure what? That there should be?
Four tenesim in Rosh
Hashanah. Four?
Ten. Ten total.
There should be ten taneos between Rosh Hashanah and Kippur. Not sitting here. Oh, so everybody's got to fast, right? Inyan. Tentaneos. That's why we start slichos. Tentaneos. Come on, guys. Let's roll out the fasting charts. So wait a second. The cheshbon learning, the cheshbon in Ben Adam Lechavero, short temperedness. It's a cheshbon to make a cheshbon. Then maybe I'm being lazy. It's another cheshbon I need to take into account. Maybe I'm just being lazy, just not willing to push myself. So who's going to answer that question? Lo me'aver layam. The answer is not somewhere me'aver layam. The answer is not b'shamayim. Ki koro ve'lecho ha'davar ma'od b'ficho v'ilvavcha la'asosa. Rabosai, we should be mispala for siyata d'shamayim. The Ribbono Shel Olam is there. Ready, it's a guarantee, it's written in the Torah, that the Ribbono Shel Olam is there, ready to help and to guide each of us as we are leading as captain of our ship. But the first step is acknowledging that he is captain of the ship, and to acknowledge that I am captain of my ship. What? But I feel so many powerful forces acting on me. There's the taivas and all sorts of factors and forces that are acting on me. I don't feel like I'm the captain of my ship. I feel like, I can't run my ship. It seems overwhelming. And Chazal back you up. Chazal say, Yilmoli HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ozro, Yiyem Shurlo. B'chol Yom V'Yom, Yitzro Shalodom, He beats them every day. Person's yetzer is stronger. So, person get the sense that I'm not in charge of my ship. That's why Rosh Hashanah starts, first of all, I am a captain because the Ribbono Shel Olam appointed me captain, and he is captain. And he's more powerful than absolutely everything. And there's nothing in the world, no force, no power, that is more powerful than he is. With an absolute achdus, there's no independent operator that I need to appeal to let me off the hook, or to somehow give me a break. Come on, Yetzer, give me a break. The Yetzer doesn't give you a break. The Yetzer doesn't, because that's not his job. He doesn't give breaks. It's not the Yetzer's job. The Yetzer doesn't give breaks. So what am I supposed to do? The answer is, first, there's Rosh Hashanah, there's an alignment process. I am aligned with the Ribbono Shel Olam, who is the absolute Echad. And there is no power, even the power that seems to me so overwhelming, that I have to appeal to somehow give me a break. First of all, the Ribbono Shel'olam is the absolute power, and he is Echad. There's no corner of my being that somehow he is not Sholeit on, and therefore if he can grant me my sovereignty, then I have absolute sovereignty. And that can happen daily, like the Mun, every single day, every single hour. Person doesn't feel they're so in charge, largely because they didn't align themselves with the source of who is in charge. So that's my message for Rosh Hashanah. B'siyata Dishmaya, that's the message, B'siyata Dishmaya, is that you need to be Mamlich HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you need to declare the Ribbono Shel Olam Melech. And the Ribbono Shel Olam's Malchus has to be declared on a very personal level. He's Melech over everything, and that includes every aspect of myself. I once heard, I think from Revolbi, that, if you'll allow me to put it in my terms, if you're saying Shema and you're declaring that the Ribbono Shel Olam is absolutely in charge, and you haven't gotten to the point where you feel that little part inside of you that wants to make the exception in the contract, if you don't feel the little part that wants to say, but not if this happens, but not, starting to put the little clauses in, if you don't feel the little rebel that you have to be Mamlich HaKadosh Baruch Hu over that little rebel, you didn't yet say Shema. Shema is meant not just for the part of me that very happily acknowledges that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Melech, go to the coronation. It's for the part of me that wants to be a rebel. It's for the part of me that even that part of me that is in charge of me, that wants to be in charge independent of the Ribbono Shel Olam, I want to be in charge without you. Those of you with little children have undoubtedly heard your children say, Mommy, do it self. I want to do it myself. Who's that? I want to do it myself. Fascinating Chazal that I'll leave you with. Fascinating. Chazal say that Moshe Rabbeinu came back and retold the conversation that he had with the Ribbono Shel Olam. He retold it to Klal Yisrael. What was the conversation? The conversation was that they didn't want to have continued exposure to the Ribbono Shel Olam directly at Har Sinai. They didn't want that. They had heard the first two Dibros. Chazal say that it was Percha Nishmosen with every word. It's not simple to die. I don't know. But they tell me that it's not simple to die. It's not so Gishmak. And they died. And the Kodesh Baruch was Mechayim Mason. The Tal Tchiyah was Mechayim Mason. And then they died again. They kept on dying. So, that's not so Gishmak. So they asked Moshe Rabbeinu, let's spare a few deaths here. You listen to everything the Ribbono Shel Olam says, and whatever you report to us, we'll consider it exactly as though we heard it from the Ribbono Shel Olam, but let's leave this dying business. Let's leave it alone. So Moshe Rabbeinu was very unhappy. If you have an opportunity to hear from the Rebbe, what are you hearing from the Talmud? The opportunity to hear from the teacher, from the source. What are you going to hear from me? Obviously, part of his enormous humility, almost overwhelming humility. You can hear it from. So we consider hearing from Moshe Rabbeinu. That's hearing it from Sinai. But Moshe Rabbeinu said, "What? That's called hearing it from Sinai? Hearing it from Sinai is hearing it from the Ribbono Shel Olam. What do you have to hear it from me?" So he was not happy. So Ribbono Shel Olam said, Moshe, you're reading them wrong. That's your humility getting in the way. It's your humility getting the win. It's not. There's no problem whatsoever. They want to hear everything that I have to say. It's the Yiras Shamayim that's causing them to want to hesitate. It's the Yiras Shamayim. Umiyitein v'hoya livovam ze lohem liyirosi. Miyitein, who would give that they should have such a heart forever? Says Moshe Rabbeinu, when he retells this story to Klal Yisrael is just listening. They just listen. Says the Medrash, Kfuye Tova, B'nei Kfuye Tova, you ingrates! Ingrates! When I told you that the Rabbeinu Shalom said, Mi Yitein V'hoyu Levavam Zelohem, when I told you that the Rabbeinu Shalom said, who would give that they would have this heart of Yiras Shamayim forever? You should have said, Atotain! You should have turned back to the Rabbeinu Shalom and said, Mi Yitein? You Rabbeinu Shalom, you give us the Yiras Shamayim. Mi Yitein? The Rabbeinu Shalom needs to say, Mi Yitein? Atotain! They understood it, Beloshin Halavai. Halavai. Halavai that they should always have a heart of Yiras Shamayim. That's how they understood it. Halavai. But the words that were used were Mi Yitein. Says Moshe Rabbeinu, you should have said, Atotain, Rabbeinu Shalom, Mi Yitein, you give us that Yiras Shamayim. You didn't because you wanted to do it on your own. You didn't want to have to be beholden to him for your Yiras Shamayim. You wanted to do it on your own. And that just goes right back to you, the Elta Zeda, Adam Arishon, Kfu Yetova B'nei Kfu Yetova. The first one who was a kafui tova. The first one who was an ingrate. You're the enoklach. You should have said atotain. Why didn't you say atotain? Because mommy, do it myself. Want to do it self. Maybe other reasons why we don't say atotain. I don't know. But Moshe Rabbeinu highlighted, the Medrash highlights the aspect of being an ingrate. Come to Rosh Hashanah, don't forget to ask. Don't forget to ask for the assistance that you need to run this ship. Yeah, but I'm supposed to do it. I'm supposed to run the ship. Atotein, Rabbeinu Shalom. Part of my coming to you is asking you for the assistance. Not that you should take over my ship. That's a cowering act of weakness. Not that you should take over my ship. But you should give me the siyata dishmaya so that I can run my ship with the chokhmah that is needed to be properly balanced. And how do you do that? You try. You apply yourself to try to say, does this make sense or does this make sense? Does this risk factor make sense? Does this risk factor make sense? And if you stop and you listen, you'll start feeling the siyata dishmaya. You start feeling, wait, something here does. It's starting to makes more sense to go to do it this way than to do it this way. It makes more sense. And where are you getting that from? Where are you drawing that from? How did you feel that it makes more sense to do it like this? Where did that come from? How'd you get there? And the answer is that you got an answer to your tefillah in Rosh Hashanah. Siyata Lishmaya you got because you started to feel a little bit more clarity deep inside. You started to get a little bit more clarity that as you assessed risk factors, things started to crystallize and to clarify. That I understand the risk factor, but nevertheless I'm going to take this risk and it feels clearer. And the place where that clarity is coming from is that makom, is that place where the Rabbeinu Shalom has been shochein in the lev of each one of us, because he's given us a mission and he's not ba b'chunyan maisel. He doesn't give us missions that we can't do. The mission, the primary mission, is a mission of sovereignty. It's for us to be sovereign and make these sort of assessments. Are we going to make errors? Yes, we will make errors. How do you know we're going to make errors? It's wired into the system. We are error prone. We're going to make errors. But you will find that as to the extent and as you ask the Rabbeinu Shalom for that ability to be sovereign, that ability to be able to make those sort of assessments with Chochmah, you will find that the Rabbeinu Shalom responds to that request. It is the ultimate and quintessential request of Rosh Hashanah. That as we are mamlich HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we are bringing to HaKadosh Baruch Hu a little melech. It's me. We're not bringing to him a little miskein. We're not bringing a little nebuchal. You know, I really hope that you run my life. Imagine the young executive. This young executive has a company. The sales team is not responding well. He's tried a few pep talks, a few motivational posters, some added incentives. He can't put fire under the seat. So he goes to a senior executive, somebody who's been running a company for many, many years, and he makes an appointment, a consultation, and he asks him about here's what he's tried, can't quite get the fire lit under the sales team. So the senior person listens and says, I've run into this from time to time. It could be that the sales team doesn't understand the product from the inside quite the way that they would need to be able to really sell it. You know, you might want to think about having the R&D people, the research and development people, meet with the salespeople so that they really have a chance to, you know, slug it out as to how the product developed and what it does and what it is from the inside, so they have a deeper understanding. Ah, thank you so much. Pays him $1,000 for his time. And he goes back to his company. Consultation. Makes sense. Imagine a different consultation. He comes in, he says, you know, I got this problem with my sales team. Terrible. I tried everything. I tried screaming. I tried being nice. I tried giving incentives. I tried everything. You know, you're really, you know, you're a big tough guy, you know. They'll respect you. Would you come talk to my sales team? You could get them going. I'll pay you. You come talk to my sales team. And the senior executive says, what do I have to do with your sales team? You run your company, I'll run mine. What do I have to do with your sales team? Well, the desperation in your voice makes it seem as though you want me to run your company. I'm not going to run your company. There's a reason why you have your company and I have my company. I'm not going to run your company. So we come to Rosh Hashanah, little kings. Kings. We have difficulty with some of the teams, difficulty with some of the operations, yes, and we need Siyata Dishmaya, absolutely need Siyata Dishmaya. Come to request the Siyata Dishmaya to be able to run our team effectively. But to come in this with a sense of desperation, I'm such a nebuch that would you please run my team? And the voice should come back, but I made you the captain. If I was going to run it myself, I wouldn't need to create you. I made you the captain of this ship called you. Yeah, but it's hard. I'm not doing such a great job. It's hard. Okay. I'm aware that it's difficult. I created you, so I have a pretty good sense that the difficulty involved. Ask me for assistance. Like a junior executive asking a senior executive for assistance. But this sense of desperation implies that somehow I got it wrong. I put the wrong captain in charge. I got this ship and I put the wrong guy in charge as captain. Rebonusum, you put the wrong guy in charge. You thought I was a big guy. I'm just a little guy. I'm a nobody. I can't run my ship. You come run my ship, or send me somebody else to run my ship. Do something. I can't run my ship. And the message comes back. Well, that would be fine if some head of the Navy put you in charge of the ship, because maybe he made a mistake. Maybe he put you in charge of the ship that you're not really suited to run that ship. But this is the Rabbeinu Shlomo who put you in charge of the ship that was perfectly and absolutely designed for you to be able to bring out the Kirvas Elokim that you can bring out of this ship. It is your mission to run the ship. And so we want to get away from that sense of desperation, because the day of Rosh Hashanah is a coronation. Coronation means that I'm a king, and I come to the coronation and I place my crown before the throne of the Rabbeinu Shlomo. I am the king and you are the king over me. That's very different than somebody coming, I have no crown. Well, if you have no crown, you have no place at the coronation. The coronation is when all of the nations come and they take their crown and they put it down in front of the Rabbeinu Shlomo's throne. They declare him to be the king over them. They are king, and the Rabbeinu Shlomo is king over me. I don't have any crown. We don't have any crown, so sit on the side and watch. You can't be part of the coronation. You want to be part of the coronation, you come to the coronation with a crown. And that crown you then set down before the throne of the Rabbeinu Shlomo, and that enhances the throne. That is what glorifies the throne. That your crown should be there before and next to the throne of the Rabbeinu Shlomo, that glorifies the throne. Don't come to the Malachim and say, I don't have a crown. I don't have a crown. I hope the coronation goes well. You know, I hope that he has a really great coronation. You know, I'll cheer. Got a little streamers, a little bleepers, you know. I have nothing to bring to this coronation. You do have something to bring to the coronation. You have the crown that the Rabbeinu Shalom gave you, the crown of being the captain of your ship. And that crown has to be internalized and activated. And yes, and we need to turn to the Rabbeinu Shalom and ask for assistance in that august, in that incredible mission of being the captain of our ship. I am not in any way making light of that mission. It's an enormous mission. But the direction that we have to move is a direction of the consultant, of a person who recognizes that I am indeed a king, and it is to the Rabbeinu Shalom that I turn for the Siyata Dishmaya. Rabbeinu Shalom should help that each one of you should feel the Siyata Dishmaya, should feel that assistance coming deep into your being that allows you to be a master, an increasing level of mastery. An increasing level of mastery that should even put you at risk, chas v'shalom, of gaiva. Should put you at risk of gaiva. I feel so much in charge of myself that I'm at risk of gaiva. So that you can come next year, Be'ezer Hashem, to Rosh Hashanah, and take that gaiva crown and place it once again before the throne of the Rabbeinu Shalom. And as that crown that you are wearing becomes bigger and more solid and more entrenched and more in place and more powerful, the meaning of your bringing that crown and placing it before the throne of the Rabbeinu Shalom will increase every single year. The crown becomes bigger, then the act of placing that crown before the throne of the Rabbeinu Shalom becomes therefore more meaningful. The little crown that we come with, so the little crown, place a little crown before the throne of the Rabbeinu Shalom, it adds a little bit. And as we start feeling ourselves more and more blessed by Rabbeinu Shalom as being a captain of our ship, of giving guidance, getting to ourselves, to our families, to others, to be able to feel a big thorny crown, then we take off that crown on Rosh Hashanah and say, Rabbeinu Shalom, this crown belongs properly at the foot of your throne. I wear it on my head only because you grant it to me. But the crown belongs before, at the footstool of your throne. May it enhance and glorify your kingship. And the Rabbeinu Shlomo Zalfen, should help us that we should be able to be an increasingly significant part of the declaration of his Malchus. Ksiv v'chasimah tov.
And that's the side effect of becoming a good captain. Diver and intolerance.
Of becoming captain, the downside is?
The downside, diver and intolerance.
Absolutely, diver and intolerance are natural byproduct of becoming a captain.
And that diver and intolerance is the same as a natural talent.
Right.
There's nothing special about it. There's no...
one of the operating risks.
No, downstairs.
Downstairs. 20.
Hey, don't bother with me.